better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
We are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3536 of the Survival Podcast and whatever it is on John's channel. And where's Nicole? Nicole's down with some kind of viral crud, so she left John and I to ourselves. So who knows what the hell is going to happen today without her to keep us kind of in between the lines of right and wrong, I guess. Anything could happen today. John, how you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm great. Great. Just working a lot of stuff within SOE, kind of just pulled back inside the building and just working on lots of tasks, revamping product. Looks like we're always going to war, right? We just changed the color of the gear for the war arena. So just spinning up and just getting gear out the door, man. Lots
back
of
to sand and Rocky Mountain patterns, huh?
You would think, but that's not what the focus is, man. The focus is jungle. It's
really
not so much armor, load carriage system, almost like revamping old Deuce gear, 782, man, like the stuff you would have used.
Huh.
Going back to belt kit, suspender, a lot of heavy load stuff, so you can wear a big rucksack.
Jungle cami, BDUs, and freaking LBE gear. Almost,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, man, we are pushing it out in woodland, in just like old school woodland.
Well, it sounds to me like people aren't preparing to go to Iran then. Maybe they're preparing to go to the Appalachians.
yeah.
You know, well, that camo pattern in the Northeast works really. I used the surplus stuff I had left over when I got out for deer hunting a long time. It works really good there.
Yeah, Woodland works here, ATAX IX, Multicam Tropic works, and you know, the majority of our customer, we don't chase contract stuff. We still do some little contract stuff here and there, but most of it's direct to consumer, and we're pushing out just the same amount of volume that we would have to contract, but to individual, and that just tells you people are concerned, and they think that there is a need for this stuff.
Yeah. For people that maybe are under a rock and don't know what's going on, the Israelis popped off a few rounds at the Iranians. The Iranians have vowed revenge, and that usually means they're going to rocket the shit out of some stuff. The U.S. has sent like 3,000 Marines, more ships. Like, we're just amassing for a war with Iran right now. And I think one of the things people need to understand, Iran is a very backwoods, backwater shithole for the life of the average Iranian, but they are not technologically defunct. They have some fairly high-end weapons tech. The country, I think a lot of people think, is pretty small. It's like the size of Texas. It's got a large population, and they've got some real zealots there, and we seem intent on provoking a war with them because Israel. And they're also closely aligned with the Chinese and the Russians. And the Russians, I don't know if you saw, John, the Russians just sent like a shitload of air defense weaponry to Iran.
Yeah, the planes are still rolling in. They're literally downloading, taking fuel in, and taking back off, and just they're pouring in, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Homestead Made Easy is asking, didn't we have U.S. troops in Iraq get rocketed last night? I've read official reports of 5 injured, but I've also read 2 killed, 2 KIA. Yeah. I haven't been able to confirm the KIAs yet, but I went to bed early last night and didn't try. My guess would be, and you tell me what you think, if there were 2 KIAs, then if they really want to make this a war, they're going to use that kind of, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin style to kind of razz people up. Look, they killed our people, even though, like, Iran didn't directly do this. It's like some militias and shit inside Iraq did this.
Yep. And, I mean, they'll always use that for whatever, just like Gulf of Tonkin, like you said.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you know how this supposedly happened. The air defense artillery systems at this base, and I can't pronounce it, so I won't try, Al-Inaka, blah, 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 failed. So the most advanced air defense systems on planet Earth failed to stop like rebel rockets. And that just seems, you know me, I'm not the super conspiracy guy. That just seems a little suspicious.
Well, I mean, look up Pearl Harbor. They knew 2 weeks ahead of time Pearl Harbor was going to happen.
So here's the big question. I don't think there's any doubt that we are looking at a potential regional war. Do you think that could escalate into like a global war? Because, I mean, I read a piece on RT yesterday that basically said, here's why that won't happen. Like, the major powers are willing to fuck with each other here, but they're not willing to risk global war over the Middle East.
On the other hand, they want global war, don't they?
Yeah,
they could suspend elections. The economies are collapsing all over the world. You have civil strife happening in friendly, NATO countries. What better way to quaff that, put an end to that, is to go to war. Anytime there's an economic collapse in a country, what saves that? War always saves that economic collapse. You have Elon Musk just tweeted out, the United States is bankrupt. It's never coming back.
It is. I mean, yeah. In my opinion, we're financially bankrupt. We're morally bankrupt. They're ethically bankrupt. But we're definitely financially bankrupt. I don't know how we ever financially – I don't know how war fixes that, I guess, though. Maybe they think it does, and that's all that really matters. But when you look at – so how did war fix the economy of the United States for, let's say, World War II, which is the one they always hold up? It's the only time it actually did have a major impact. Like, the Vietnam War really wasn't great for the economy. The 70s still sucked and got worse until the war ended. But World War II put everybody on, like, an industrial footing. It put everybody to work. And it put a lot of people to work who never would have even tried to go to work, as far as like women and some older guys that were done, but they didn't qualify for the draft, so they went and popped rivets or something. You can't do that today with war because it's a money problem, not an employment problem. Like, we just made too much money, and if the plan is to make more money, war doesn't really help you with that. You just make more money to spend on other shit. So I don't know how it actually fixes the economically to go to war globally.
Maybe their plan is to put people to work. Maybe that's part of what this new draft thing is, this conscription that you keep hearing about. You know, they're not going to send everybody as a war fighter, but they will send everybody to the war effort.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I think people don't realize you can have a massive mobilization and not necessarily your side has a lot of losses. As bad as we took it in World War II, do you know that 97% of deployed GIs from the United States in World War II came home uninjured?
I did not know that.
I just learned. I'm finally reading the Fourth Turning, and I'm actually listening to it on audio. I don't have time to sit down and read a book that deep. And like when I heard that, I like fact checking because I'm like, no, that can't be right. But when you start looking at the sheer numbers and all the places they were deployed to and all the things that they did beyond. Mm-hmm. The riflemen doing the fighting, like all the logistics, all the road building, all of that. Like, you're like, okay, now I get it, because your infantry is generally like 10 to 15% of your military that actually are the tip of the spear to do the fighting. And, you know, they tell you when you're in the military, like, your job is to support them. Like, that's the thing that we do. But all those people, like, there's, you know, there's like an 8 to 1, 8 to 2, 8 to 1 or 9 to 1 ratio. And I think today it's probably higher. It probably is like a 90%, 10% thing in our military. And no one wants to do it, right? Nobody wants to join. So could it just be a way to justify a draft?
Yeah. Yeah. And those guys don't make good war stories either. So you don't see that on the big screen, you know, the logistics and support guys.
No. Fuck the mechanic who fixes your truck, the cook that makes your food. The people that make sure you have more bullets, people that make sure you have clean clothes so your crotch doesn't rot off. Like, those people aren't important. That's the mindset that we have. But when you're in the field, you kind of really care about logistics a lot, even when you're not at war. Just when you're in, you know, like a deployment. Like, I was in Honduras for 6 months, and we were there as a logistical support element for an engineer battalion. So they didn't even have the ability to logistically support themselves in some ways. So we were like detached from our unit was made up of like 12 other companies who each sent a small number of people specialized in certain skill sets to make sure they had like clean water so nobody died drinking the creek water, to make sure that people could take showers, to make sure that trucks kept rolling. So they had their mechanics that could do things like change oil, right? Like their first level mechanics, like third shop maintenance where you're swapping out transmissions because soldiers break shit and all. Like, we had to go there just to do that to support one battalion.
Right.
And so imagine deploying massively and then being, something like they missed like 60,000 headcount was what they missed recruiting by last year.
Mm-hmm. I think that was one branch. I think that was the Army, right?
The Marine Corps. I don't know about the Corps and the Air Force and the Navy. Marine Corps might have met their goals because they're so much smaller, and the recruiters are, well, they're very good at egging young men to join. I mean, they're really good. They just basically say, you can't do it. Yes, I can. Okay, sign.
Well, they have changed all their recruiting posters and all their recruiting videos and stuff.
Yeah.
They're back to the old school stuff.
They are, but they're not internally. They're like outward projection is we're badass. Come join us. But their leadership is still a bunch of woke fucks. Right?
Yeah, take this DEI class. And.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that's still going on. I know guys who are on the old retirement where 20 years and you're done for good and you get paid for the rest of your life. So they're hanging in there. You know, guys that are like 17, 18, 19 years. And they're telling me like that it feels like if you're that person, they're doing everything that they can to make you quit on your own because they can't get rid of you, right? But including, like, I know one dude's a little bit younger. He's like he's a first sergeant now, and he's at a point where they're probably going to, before he hits his 20, offer him sergeant major. And if he turns it down, they can throw him out.
Yeah. Well, how long are they going
to
hold him?
It's going to add 6 years to his enlistment.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Marine Corps was saying 74 and the Army was saying like 70 years old for active ready reserve callback.
Yeah. Yeah. But
those guys won't be combatants though. They'll go to schools and then they'll free up the school instructors to go out as, you know, on deployments.
I will tell you that during first Gulf War, we had guys coming in that were recalled that were in their like our age, like 40s and 50s. Right. And these guys were out of shape. They gave them waivers. They had pot bellies. They were eating donuts and shit. But they brought them in. They were specialists from the missile system that predated what we're using now. And they had just rolled a lot of this stuff out. And they didn't have enough people with expertise to run the air defense artillery shit. So they brought these guys in because you could cross-train them like that. Because of what they knew from the past, they could be cross-trained like that. So they were combatants. But they obviously weren't running around with rucksacks and shit. They were sitting, you know, behind the lines, knocking scuds out of the air because, well, in that war, I forget how old we are now. There was a lot of effort by the Iraqis to drag Israel into that war, to completely discombobulate the largely Arab coalition that cooperated, like the Saudis cooperated, you know, like all the Yemen cooperated, all these nations, they don't even like each other, cooperated in that first war. And the Iraqi play was, if we can drag Israel in, then all these Arab countries will turn to us, which didn't happen. But that's what those guys were doing, is just knocking scuds down. And
plus those guys,
they were not in shape, man. You and I are in amazing shape compared to those. We're like 18-year-olds compared to those guys.
Plus those guys can problem solve. They know that system inside and out, and it's not just what the book says. Yeah, I know what the book says, but I'm telling you, this will do this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There's a difference to that. I mean, you've got a lot of guys who have just fired trainers. You know, you've got guys out there that haven't ever fired a tow or any of those even the shoulder packable, man packable stuff. They've only fired trainers, a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. AT-4s with a 9mm tracer round.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we did in school. Which I understand that. Like, cracking off an AT-4 is kind of expensive. But the guys that are like, that was like an every soldier thing. Like every soldier needs how to know how to work this in case. Like the guys that are actually going to do it, you might actually want to spend a little money and actually get them some real experience, you know, so they don't freak out the first time they do it or something.
Yep.
So let's look at two angles. One is Cackles wins the White House and becomes the president with Tim, whatever the fuck his name is from. The other is the Orange Man triumphs, right? And we got the new shirts here in the house from John. Nice try, you missed me.
Did you see Google change the face to the Secret Service guy? So that I saw Trump say that, and I'm like, no way. And they had changed it to make him smiling.
Explain it. Yeah, explain it.
Yeah, yeah. They changed it to make it look like it wasn't such a severe situation. And then they also took, for a while there, they busted out pretty quick on it. But if you search Donald Trump assassination, it would not auto-populate. It wouldn't even complete it. You couldn't find it for a 12, 16-hour period. It got busted out pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, you would type in, if you didn't start with Trump, you start assassination attempt on it. It was like auto-filling Truman.
Yeah, all kinds of shit came out other than Trump. Yeah.
So I'll tell you what it is, because this used to be my world back in the day, understanding Google's algorithms and basically turning them into my bitch as an SEO guy. They build these algorithms in. It's not like they said, okay, so Trump did this, we're going to do this. Like, the algorithm was already predisposed to do shit like that. So when it happened, it just, like, no one had to manually say do it. What they manually had to do was override their own algorithm bias to correct it. And it's internally in Google, it's called a hand job. And this was leaked about, I want to say 2005, 2006, by a dude whose online handle was Google Guy. And he was an insider that was leaking all of Google's evil shit. And eventually, I think they caught him. And they twisted it around and they started saying, like, if you want to keep your job, you're going to leak the shit we tell you to now. But before they caught him, he leaked this, like, 22-page PDF that was for, like, all the Google bitch interns that came in and worked for free that told them what to do and how to do it. And there was, like, 3 pages on how to hand job shit from the back end in Google. So what they did, they got caught, and then they went and hand-jobbed it to correct it.
Got it.
So that bias is in there all the time. And the reason that's worse is it's not situational. That bias is always there and always will be there unless, I don't know, Google goes out of business or something.
Well, didn't they just say in Congress that they're a conglomeration or something? Didn't they just vote on something or say something yesterday, day before, about Google specifically?
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody in the audience can give us some info on that in the live chat.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I know that Zuckerberg supposedly called Trump and apologized for their AI tool saying that there was no assassination attempt and supposedly said he would not vote for a Democrat in the coming election. And that's Zuckerberg. So I don't know if that's fake or bullshit or a Trump hallucination or what.
Yeah, that was around the same time he said Trump was a badass when he said fight.
Yeah. I think that really rattled the left more than anything else. Like, they were wanting to get rid of Biden, but, like, that was like, we've got to get rid of Biden at that point. Like, we just got to get rid of the guy.
Well, they keep popping that dude in there, but, I mean, when you look at the pictures of him next to his wife and you look at the pictures of him next to other people, there's, like, a 6-inch difference in there. Guy, that dude in the mask.
Yeah. They put this out yesterday.
Monopoly is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Let me see if I can put this up. Okay. So they showed Brandon by himself heading to Marine One in a USA jacket. trumpeting how many medals the U.S. has won, which I think this is like the worst watched Olympics in history. Nobody gives a shit. Like, they've ruined even the Olympics. He looks pathetic and frail from behind. But my thing is, right, so you alluded to it. The stock market's crashing. The global stock markets are crashing. The world is on fire. We're on the edge of war with a major country. This is not going to war. Iran is not Afghanistan. This is a different thing. And they have time to worry about this bullshit. And doesn't he look pathetic and weak from like a pose Photoshop from behind, photo op from behind, and he still looks pathetic and weak? I think we're a laughing stock, John.
Well, who knows when that picture was even taken?
Just because it's an Olympic jacket doesn't mean it was yesterday, right?
I mean, your AI picture yesterday looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah, of me?
Yeah,
that was kind of creepy, actually. let me see. Like, you carry it for a second. I'll see if I can find that.
So you keep, and you know, you had people coming out saying, you know, with the markets crashing and everything, and Bitcoin coming down in price and all that stuff happening, it's because the polls are saying Kamala Harris is going to win. Well, who's putting that out there? So is the markets crashing and all the turmoil happening in the markets because of the possibility of Kamala Harris, or is that just coincidence? And where do those polls come from, and how many people were polled? They never tell you that when you hear these polls and these numbers. They never tell you where that poll took place, nor how many people. What'd they poll? 50 people in Washington, D.C.? Where'd those numbers come from?
Yeah. Yeah, I keep hearing all this shit about how Harris is surging in the polls. What I don't hear is any explanation of why that would be the case. So everybody hated her. They gave her the nomination. she's not really done anything since then that's in any way beneficial to her campaign. And all of a sudden she's surging in the polls and all. It just sounds like fake bullshit to me, John.
Well, it is fake bullshit.
It really does. It doesn't mean she won't win.
It is fake bullshit. She threw a rap concert. A bunch of people showed up. When she started speaking, they left. Yeah. It's interesting to see. It's interesting to see the perspective of the other side. All of a sudden, I'm getting targeted and fed super liberal ads or super liberal YouTube videos. It's all over for Trump or Trump's rallies. There's nobody attends Trump rallies. And I watch the videos and I'm like, man, are we watching the same video? What are you talking about?
My favorite thing about this, John, all of my videos now, when I go check to make sure they uploaded right and everything, the introductory ads are all Kamala Harris ads.
Everywhere.
Right? So she's spending her campaign donors' money on videos. I don't think that's an effective strategy.
Yeah, that's not her campaign donor money either.
No. Tell me if you think this is likely. Last election, the DNC got busted for money laundering, effectively taking what would be PAC level money and moving it through the accounts of individuals so they could be direct donations to the candidates. And it was billions of dollars. Now, all of a sudden, Kamala Harris is announced as the presumptive nominee. She hasn't even been voted for. And the next day, she raises $80 million. I kind of feel like that's probably happened again. Like, where did all these, like, did Debbie in Des Moines or Nancy in Nebraska wake up the next day and go, oh, Kamala, and, like, make first time to, like, this doesn't sound right to me. It's not even my opinion of Harris. It's like, it could be anybody in that same situation. This doesn't make sense to me.
Have you seen, who's the guy that was doing all the undercover exposés, busting out all the nonsense? And then they kind of took over his corporation and pushed him out. I can't remember what his name was. He was super big like a year ago. He was just going door to door to a bunch of Democratic donors and said, hey, you're listed as having donated $200,000 to the Kamala Harris campaign. Did you do that? And they're like, no, I donated once, or I donated once to Biden. And the math would have been such that they had to donate 20 times a day to accumulate the amount of money that each of these names, and they're all just people living in very, you know, kind of, you know, mid-income, low-income housing. And they're like, no, I didn't donate any of this. They're using those people's addresses to funnel that money into Act Blue, the same place all the money from BLM went to Act Blue, and then it passed from Act Blue into the Democratic, the White House fund there.
Yeah. Because, you know, banks never set up accounts in your name that don't exist or anything. Well, wait, that did happen. What it makes me think of, and it is like, you know, typical suburbs, Nothingville places, and all these people donated this money, spread out, randomized, whatever. Do you remember long, long ago, we would have been teenagers, when Johnny Carson was a thing?
Yeah.
And Ed McMahon, right? Remember Ed McMahon and the Publishers Clearinghouse thing? John Stossel, who was very young at the time, did a expose on 2020 about Publishers Clearinghouse. And he brought an expert in, and the expert said, you'll never win. Nobody you know will ever win. And nobody that you know anybody that will ever know anybody that ever won. But somebody that lives in middle America will be put on TV as the person that won. And if you try to find that person who supposedly won, you will never find them. They do not exist. That is how I feel about all these mega donors and all these like small donors to Harris. Like, it's not just the fact that I can't stand the woman, because I can't. It's just a logical evaluation of the situation. You're talking about a woman that couldn't get 1% of the vote in the Democratic primary in her home state.
Yeah, not a single.
I guess the other side of it is there's a lot of hatred. I guess you could put my dog in against Trump, and there's a certain amount of support they're going to get.
Yeah, James O'Keefe, Veritas Project, is who I was talking about.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I love that dude. But he had a falling out with Veritas. I don't know the thing about it, but he had a falling out with his own people or something, and now he's independent or something like that?
He is independent. They actually pushed him out. It was taken over. I think there was some liberal nonsense that had happened in there.
Okay.
The funding.
So what do you think we should be doing with all this shit going on?
Same thing you've been doing. Just keep working. keep yeah. building, add value, gain new customers, take care of your existing customers better, upsell your customers. It's always easier to sell to an existing customer. Provide such good service and product to your customers that they refer new customers to you. Continue to just grow food, grow a business, build an empire, build something so incredible that your children want to remain around and be part of your business and family rather than try to escape. And when they escape, that's typically what happens, right? Stop sending your kids to governments. The same stuff we've been doing.
Yeah. I my opinion on the school thing is this is becoming more and more important. I'm not a guy like, see, I was right. I don't like to do that. But when it comes to the schools, I was right. And it's starting to happen. Schools are closing all over the country. And I forecasted that right when COVID started. I could see the migration happening and what have you. And then we have this kind of demographic bomb in young people. People just aren't having kids the way they used to. So the college enrollment cliff hit this year, and it hits in force next year. And what that is, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there's like a certain number of people that graduate high school that can go to college every year. Like you have a pool of potential customers for college. And then some percentage of that move on to college. And the solution up till now has been make more colleges, make them bigger, and make it easier to get in. But now that number that comes out at the end of 12 years of school, or 13 years if you count kindergarten, is shrinking. And next year, it's like a drop of something like 20% in 1 year. And so colleges have been shitting a brick about this for 20 years, trying to figure out what to do about it. And so you can only get so many people out of that life. And then the value is going down. So they're collapsing. But that also means like high schools now are starting to have that waning. Then everybody moved during COVID because if I can work remotely, what the fuck am I living in L.A.? And paying $4,000 a month for basically a closet when I can go live in Nebraska and work for this company. And for that amount of money, I can have a McMansion. So that pulled people out of those cities. Like here in Texas, John, if you said in Dallas-Fort Worth, where do the rich people live? Every person who lives here would say Plano, Richardson, Addison, right? Like that's would just come out of their mouth because it is true. Plano's closing next year, six schools. Arlington, which is a fairly well-off area as well, just closed a bunch of schools. My sister-in-law is a teacher. She's doing special ed. They basically moved her into a closet to do her special ed teaching because they had to move her out of the classroom she had because they put so many – so they close and then they consolidate. Well, yep. There's not enough to keep two open, but there's too many really for one. And this is starting to happen, and that means that all the shitty performance, all the crap that's been going on in the school system will now get worse. Because when a system's in distress, they don't tend to do a better job, right? Like, the military might because your survival's on the line. But when you're a teacher that's just looking for your retirement, you know, they already, like, and I'm not going to beat on teachers because I can imagine being a teacher with 30 years in, I think you probably have had the life force sucked out of your body by then, even if you're the best person in the world. And so, like, that system is dying now. If you don't get your kids out of it, it's going to destroy their future.
Well, you're going to destroy your by letting them participate in that system.
Valid.
That is your future, right? If you don't have children with your last name will not progress through history. And you have to mold and set the direction of what those kids are going to believe. And if you're not teaching them what you believe, somebody's teaching them something that you don't necessarily believe.
What was the old saying? Do not send your kids to Rome.
Yep.
To the emperor for education and be surprised when they come back Romans, right? Or yeah. Malcolm X said only a fool would let his enemy educate his children.
Yeah. Yeah, they killed him.
Yeah, and they killed him. Hey, I was thinking about this. I was telling my wife about this. Every populist president that we've ever had, somebody tried to kill. There's not a lot of them, actually. Like, Jackson was a populist president, and somebody tried to kill him, and he near beat the guy to death with a cane. Somebody tried to kill not the second one, the first. Teddy Roosevelt was a populist, Bull Moose Party, right? Somebody tried to kill him at a speech. Like, his speech saved his life. I would say JFK was a populist. They killed him. Reagan, I don't know, but at the time, kind of looked populist. Somebody tried to kill him.
Yeah, he was saying some things
Trump's
that were
populist,
not.
Trump's a populist, bro. Trump's not a Republican. Trump's a populist.
Yeah, and I mean, JFK was saying, you know, industrial military complex. Ronald Reagan has some great quotes out there. Yeah, they are not for the, you know, big establishment, or at least the verbal forward was not for the big establishment. I just saw something happen interesting in our local Facebook group. We have a population of 6,500 in the county here, and the elementary school has a population, or the city population of, I think, 3,500. And they had put something forth from the health department and something asking, you know, registrations on these dates, and here's the, you can get your wellness check for your child to qualify to go to school. And I said, are you requiring the COVID vaccination? And I never got a straight answer as to whether they were or not. I got I don't think they are. But Amanda pointed something out. She said, did you notice there was two, because I didn't enlarge the screenshots of the photo they took of the, you know, pamphlet hanging there. And I said, no, I didn't see what they both said. She said, one is completely in Spanish. And I said, that's weird. We don't have Spanish speaking children here. There's not any population of Spanish speakers here. There are a few people here who speak Spanish, but they're mostly men. They work at the Mexican restaurant, and then their families are in Mexico. I just found it interesting. Where is the population that we need these things put up now in Spanish all of a sudden, or when will they arrive is really the point that I'm making. What is the plan?
Yeah. Yeah, something.
Something. Where are they coming from? Because they're not currently here.
You know, did that get rolled out through the whole state or something? But the COVID mandatory thing is, you know, most people aren't going to ask their teacher or their principal or their school board if it's mandatory. They're going to go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to tell them that it is.
Yeah,
they'll say that it's recommended or something. But the way, you know, this white coat syndrome, dude in the white coat with the stethoscope has authority. Like, that's how most people view it. I don't, you don't, but most do.
Yeah, like Angie said, typically they're requiring the flu, but the flu is now combined with the COVID-19 vaccine.
That was another prediction I made before the vaccine existed. I said they'll do that so that people that want the flu vaccine will have to get the COVID vaccine. And that wasn't hard to predict. They did it with MMR.
Yep.
Right? They did it with MMR. Why wouldn't they do it with everything they can? And I've always had an issue with this stacking vaccine shit. Let's take all the vaccine conspiracy theory and put it on the shelf for a minute. I'm just going to say the most stringent, systemic, back the system doctor. If you say, do vaccines have side effects? Well, they're yes or no. Yes, they do. Can they be very severe? Yes. Okay. So if I give a kid 12 vaccines in one day and they have a reaction, how do you know which one they reacted to? Or how do you know which combination? Because you're going to want to do this again, and I'm going to say no. So if I have a child individually vaccinated and they have a reaction to one but not the others, I know that it's probably not worth the risk of that one again. But if you give them 9 and you just tell me, oh, it's normal, don't worry about it, well, fuck that. It's not your kid, right? You know, I heard somebody when this all started up with COVID say, make a form that says that your doctor waives all legal protections under the government regulations and assumes full responsibility for anything that occurs because of a vaccination. Take that with you to the doctor's office and say, before you vaccinate my child, I want this signed and notarized. And watch how no one will do it. Not a single doctor. That should tell you something.
Yeah, they're still pushing all that COVID shit out there.
They certainly are. Let's get some questions. Go ahead. Go ahead.
They bought 5 million vaccines for the H1N1 or whatever, the bird flu currently. That's in motion.
Yeah, it's in motion, but no one seems to care. Like, this is like, do you think maybe they overplayed it with COVID? Like, because now they're going bird flu, and everybody's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I don't think anybody's going to let them lock them down. Not over the bird flu.
No. The bird flu that goes to the cows, and now it's a war on meat. I mean, that seems like where it's going.
And dairy, yeah.
All right, guys, if you want us to pay attention to what you're doing out there, please give me the word question or comment in all capital before your statement or question, and we will try to get you. I've got about 6 right now we can talk about, so let's throw some stuff at John here. Tarot Killer says, The commitment of government to deal with the population issue is, of course, essential. There are many ways to make the death rate increase. Robert McNamara, Secretary of Defense, 1981.
Sounds along the lines of what Bill Gates says with we'll control population through vaccinations and birth control. Bill Gates had a polio vaccine that was used through, I think it was Thailand and India.
Yes.
And they actually gave active polio. I think it was 16,000 people got that vaccine that actually got polio.
Yep.
They actually have an arrest warrant for Bill Gates in one of those countries where they're going to imprison him and bring him to trial as soon as they capture him.
Yep.
Not that that'll ever happen. Yeah, that's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah, he won't go there because that's when they'll get him. If he goes to one of those countries, they will arrest his ass. I just say that when people tell you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
I mean, McNamara was a freaking war criminal. I mean, he was on our side, but if you look at some of like the shit that was done in Vietnam and the end of World War II, he was involved with the firebombing of the cities in Japan. Like when you start firebombing towns and cities where people build their houses out of fucking wood and paper, those are not military targets.
Aren't they trying to declare war right now? The last war we declared was what, Vietnam? Congress never declares war, and now they have a proposition forward to declare war.
Did you see who submitted it?
Who did?
Lindsey fucking Graham.
Of course.
The biggest chicken hawk piece of crap on planet Earth. I would pay $10,000 for 5 minutes in a fucking MMA ring with Lindsey Graham. And donate the money then to charity if you want to, Lindsey. I mean, really, just like this guy is such a maggot. And the man has never risked a thing in his life. He has no kids. He's probably closet gay and he's married for appearance purposes because he's old enough to where that mattered. It seems like he has no concern about what we leave behind. And there is not a war he's not for. There is not an oppression of the people of the country. Like every NDAA, he's out in front of it. Like we have to do this. He was out in front on the Patriot Act, the Freedom Act, all that shit. And as much as I hate all politicians, the ones that are pro-war with zero sacrifice, they're the ones I hate the most.
Guys, about the likes there, you can, if depending on the device you're on, if you just double tap your screen, it will list you as a like. It will raise those likes.
Please do that for us. Let's move on. I don't know why we can't find new questions here.
Will they go after first? The foods, the food supply, the animals, or the people? Well, I think they're already going after the food supply. I think everybody can agree on that. The animals are part of the food supply. You now have this, you've got to register all your cattle deal with RFID. We keep hearing one of the largest poultry producers, one of the largest egg producers has burnt down. That's because they already burnt the first 200 largest down last year. Those are gone. What they're burning down now is not the largest. It's the largest existing currently.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of that, guys, will be insurance too. You're seeing all kinds of housing development complexes with hundreds of stack and packs and condos in them right now that are being lit on fire. That's insurance money. Those people did not pay that money. The bank is taking that and they are burning that shit to the ground. Not the bank, but the developers and the investors in those things are burning that shit to the ground to get the insurance money out of them.
Yeah, I believe that. I absolutely believe that. It seems to me that we have way too many of these facilities going up in flames for it to be organic, for it to be natural, for it to just be something that happens. I mean, we have these major production facilities. And, you know, if they're like canning facilities or something, there's a lot of electrical shit going on. I guess, you know, if it's built in 1965, and they bribed the inspector on the electrical, that could be a thing. But when you have like dairy farms in South Texas that have been around for 30 years that are basically just a big fucking barn with a bunch of cows in them explode into flames?
Yeah.
Why? What, did a cow fart and it exploded over somebody's candle? Or what the fuck would cause these types of like, you've seen it. It's not just like there was a fire here and this side, like the whole thing is gone, completely consumed in a way that any arson investigator would have their radar on if they cared. Like, it just, facilities don't generally burn that way, right? These industrial facilities have fire suppression systems. How is that not at least keeping the structure intact?
Jennifer, where did Ice Age Farmer go? That's a good question. What do you think happened to him? Because I have heard absolutely nothing. He was in California. He was putting out all kinds of information, kind of Alex Jones type stuff. Most of the information he put out did seem to come to pass very quickly. And then he just disappeared. The last thing I heard was a year and a half ago. Nobody's seen or heard from him since then.
I haven't heard from him.
No. No.
We'll see.
Somebody said, how long do you think the riots are going to go in the UK? So what is happening in the UK right now? There's a lot of different things, but you've taken a bunch of cultures. You have concentrated them into an area where they do not assimilate, right? You've got a bunch of Somalis who do not like people from the UK. They want to do what they're doing. You have a 17-year-old boy who was born in the UK, two Somali immigrant parents, and he stabbed three children at a dance class. I believe they were young teenagers. Stabbed them to death at a Taylor Swift themed dance class. She actually commented on this. The parents and the locals have come out in protest against the immigrants. And if you look at their protests, they are very different. They are behind fences. It is very organized. There's not a lot going on other than a lot of screaming and yelling. The Somalis have come out and took up arms, hammers, and they have been now fighting with the protesters who were behind the fences, and it is escalating. The same thing happening in France. It's happening all over the place. Just like people are just tired of their bullshit, the government's bullshit, right? The government says, oh, you can't protest, but they are not prosecuting or doing anything about all the people with the hammers. Same thing with all your farmers, spraying manure all over Parliament. Now, none of them are at Parliament. It doesn't affect them in any manner. It's an off gassing. It lets that, it relieves the pressure. Nothing's going to change over it. Looks great. I mean, I'm all for it. Fucking go to DC and spray some manure all over the place.
Yeah.
Until people pull those politicians out and tar and feather them, none of this is going to change.
Well, what's happening in UK is a classic example of trying to create a civil war so that you can come in and put it down and can establish more power and control. Because like you said, they're letting these freaking immigrants burn shit, smash people with hammers, stab people, get away with it. And they're literally throwing people in prison in the UK for comments made on Facebook. Like, that sounds conspiratorial, and I have people sometimes ask me, like, well, when do we physically resist? I'm like, well, that would be about where I would say, no matter what, like, that's where the line has to be drawn. Like, you can't have people unable to even speak their mind and then be thrown in prison and have anything approaching a free society. I don't know exactly where the line is, but I know that's over it.
The same thing's happening in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All over fucking Europe. Canada, yeah. Yeah.
Canada said it is legal for them to access your Facebook and send messages and make posts as though it was you on your Facebook page.
Unbelievable.
What do all these places have in common? They are unarmed.
Have you seen what was on Rogan recently about all these immigrants and the inbreeding?
No.
Let me, I'm going to mute your mic so that it doesn't echo through. And I'm going to play this. It's about 2 minutes long. And then we'll come back and chat about it.
I think a part of it was inbreeding.
This is your own theory.
No. Look at
someone else.
Muslims
has a theory?
And inbreeding. Major problem.
I've never heard this before.
Especially with immigrants in Britain, like the Pakistanis in London. They'll have all kinds of serious inbreeding problems because that's an even smaller sample size you're dealing with.
Strap yourself in for this. 70% of all Pakistanis are inbred. And in Turkey, the amount is between 25 to 30%. More stillbirths among immigrants. A rough estimate reveals that close to half of everybody living in the Arab world is inbred. A large percentage of the parents said, this is blowing my mind. So listen to the BBC investigation in Britain several years ago revealed that at least 55% of the Pakistani community in Britain was married to a first cousin. Holy shit. BBC's research also discovered that while British Pakistanis account for just 3.4% of all births in Britain, they accounted for 30% of all British children with recessive disorders and a higher rate of infant mortality. What in the fuck? Labour Party MP has called for a ban on first cousin marriage. Medical evidence shows that one of the negative consequences of inbreeding is a 100% increase in the risk of stillbirths. Wow. That is insane.
I also read somewhere that a lot of the symptoms of inbred people are irrational rage, fanaticism, and they end up just describing ISIS.
Look at what it says here. That with the IQ points, it says findings on intelligence. Research shows that if one's parents are cousins, intelligence goes down 10 to 16 IQ points. The risk of having an IQ lower than 70, criterion for being retarded, in quotes, are they using that word? Mm-hmm. Increases 400%. Among children from cousin marriages. Well, let me say that again. The risk of having an IQ lower than 70 increases 400.
All right, John, what do you think about all that? Let me get you on my, there you go.
Who's the chick from the squad that married her husband, married her brother?
Oh, the Somali chick. I can't think of her name.
Latita Lashib or something.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go. I guess. But I mean, if you think about it, like BBC is the source of those statistics, right? And some investigation they did. So BBC is like PBS in the United States and Britain, and more so, like they're really tied in with the government, right? I mean, remember the UK, you have to have a license to have a fucking television in your house, like seriously.
So they knock on the door and check.
So they had to know that they were bringing in violent, like from the general look of the thing. But on top of this, that they were bringing in violent inbred people with low IQs in record numbers into their society and then giving them a privileged place. Like if you want to fuck up your own country, isn't that like a recipe book on how to do it?
Well, I mean, look who's burning down France. It's not people that were born in France that burnt down all those monuments, right? You hear Notre Dame. There was 38 of those cathedrals that have been burnt down that can never be replaced. It's not people from France. It's not people that were born in France that are burning them motherfuckers down.
Well, and Backwoods Butcher says that's Rogan's old studio, which makes it worse, which makes it that data was available before Rogan moved to Austin. That's what that means. So that's 3 or 4 years ago, at least minimum, I think. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Let's take some other questions, maybe on some other things. Edgy American says, are any of y'all currently bartering? It seems like a good answer. What do you think on that? I think like, everything I sell, I'm bartering for. I'm just taking money. Like, I think barter is great when it fits, but there's a reason we have money.
Well, I mean, people ask me every night, should you buy silver and gold? And the person asking that is never buying enough silver and gold that it matters. Yes, yeah. Have silver and gold. How much Bitcoin do you have? It's just like, it's the same thing with the Bitcoin stuff. The guy's like, where should I buy silver? You're not buying enough that it matters. Buy it wherever you can. Same thing with Bitcoin. The guy who wants to point out that, you know, he doesn't trust Bitcoin because his power might go out. He also has no bank account. I'm like, well, put a screenshot of your bank account and I'll put a screenshot of my Bitcoin and we'll see whether we should be having the conversation or not. The barter thing's great. But the barter thing only works if you're not going to – what are you going to barter me for this van outside here that I want $35,000 for? Are you going to bring me silver and gold? I bought a Chevy K5 Blazer with gold pandas and maple leaves. I did that with a Middle Eastern dude. You'd be hard-pressed to get it to do it today because there's so much fake silver and gold out there. Yeah. You might even have a tester that tests it. Nobody trusts it anymore. Collapse of society? Absolutely. More perfect. Yes, you should have that. But you know what? You know what you can barter today? Cash. And there's no transactionable event if that dude has cash and it's just you and him at a flea market someplace, or the guy comes off of Marketplace or Facebook or whatever. But as far as, I mean, how many eggs are you going to charge? How many eggs are you going to bring me for this van out here? I don't need your eggs. Yeah. How many knives are you going to bring me for this van out here? I don't need that many knives. So barter, yeah, absolutely. Do anything you can at any time where there is a non-traceable event of that. But you'd be hard-pressed when a great opportunity presents itself this Saturday and you've got a bunch of gold coins. Because little Betty selling that tractor up the road, she ain't taking gold coins. And your bank's not taking gold coins. And more and more, I say this all the time, and I get a lot of pushback on this. And for every dude pushing back, there's 10 guys saying, yep, I went and tested it. Go try to get $5,000 in cash out of your bank. Most people can't do it. You cannot fucking do it. It used to be 10 grand. A bank manager told me, hey, when you ask what that threshold is, we're supposed to report you to the IRS just for asking it. And a lot of banks, it's $5,000 now. Go put $3,000 in. They want all kinds of paperwork for you to put the money in, and they want even more paperwork and up to 72 hours for you to get the money out.
Yeah. Yeah. They want, you have to prearrange it and all. It's your own money, and they won't give it to you. That tells you, like, all these, they still make these TV movies where, like, the dude's daughter is kidnapped, and he's supposed to give $275,000 in a bag by tomorrow, and he goes to the bank and he leaves with a duffel bag full of money. That's not possible. That girl's dead if the kidnapper means it, because the guy, no matter what he does, he's not getting $275,000 out of the bank. Maybe if the FBI's in on a sting and says, hey, give the dude the money, but that's about it. Most of your banks don't have the money. They don't have any kind of cash on hand.
That's a good comment. How many of my utilities can I pay in barter? My bank doesn't care about my mortgages when I bring in some whatever I bartered for.
No.
And I'm not saying don't do it. I mean, absolutely. Do it as much as you can, guys.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem, we have cash because the barter is connecting what I have with the guy that has what I want. And that's not that guy. It's usually four or five parties. You know what fixes that? Cash.
Cash. Cash fixes it. Cash is always, I don't know anybody doesn't take cash. That may change at retail establishments and things like that. And that may actually start to put a burden on our ability to transact in cash.
And you're seeing places that have cash prices and credit prices. When I got my first credit card processor, it was illegal to charge you an extra 3%. Now you see guys doing it all over the place. It's commonplace. It says it right on the doors now.
I will tell you, if you come on a large sale where you take physical cash, don't put that shit in the bank. And not so much because you'll set off alarms. Like, let's say you sold a car or a van or something for $30,000. A guy paid you in dollars, like cash. The problem is once you put it in, you can't get it out. And so what I would do if I were in that situation, I would start paying for everything. If you didn't want to like save it, I would pay for everything I could with cash with that cash and let money accumulate in the bank on the stuff that moves electronically or something like that, because you may need it. And if you're only taking little bits of it to like buy your groceries every week or something like that, you still have a pretty good lump sum of it. But if you decide you want cash, like John's saying, they're not going to give it to you. And that's, if you want to know, do we live in a free society? When you can't get your own money out of the bank, the answer is no. You don't live in a free society. KT says, if schools are closing, how many school closings does it take before we have our property taxes decrease? It won't matter. I think if we went to all homeschool where they were running like state sanctioned homeschool like they did during COVID-19, They would still take, they'd say they need more money for more advanced systems and better teachers or whatever bullshit they made up. Like, I don't see, because the service declines, the tax going down. Has that ever happened?
Nope. They're never going to. And they keep raising and raising and raising your property values.
Well, and they would just say, we owe so much money, we need it anyway.
Yep.
Like, because it's not just the federal government that's $35 trillion in debt. Every major school district out there has shitloads of bond money out that they owe back.
Right? Well, that's what Japan just cashed in all its U.S. bonds. And the bonds, the United States is offering savings bonds at 5% interest right now. Nobody's buying them. And that's with the United States backing it. That's not some local municipality.
Yeah, yeah. You hear Ukraine has basically announced the default on their bonds?
I didn't hear that. I know there's all kinds of luxury goods driving around. I know we paid all kinds of pensions and shit over in Ukraine.
They announced that like they're stopping their coupon payments on bonds for a certain amount of time. Well, they have no new source of money other than us. And I think that's drying up, and they're going to be hung out to dry. Trump says if he gets in, he wants them to pay the money back. That'll be interesting. But I think the projected full default is in sometime in November after the election, that Ukraine will go into a full default on its debt. And that's an interesting little timing thing going out there. And then Zelensky's recently said, we need to make peace as quickly as possible.
I saw that too. I saw that.
I'm sure he has plenty of villas to run off to and insider paperwork to make him an expat where he'll be safe somewhere in Barbados or some shit like that when this is all over. Because I personally, you tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think if Zelensky becomes a private citizen in Ukraine and doesn't leave, he's dead.
Zelensky is already a U.S. citizen. He has U.S. citizenship and he has U.S. Secret Service detail. He owns three estates in the United States, one of them being in Florida. There was a Secret Service agent whistleblower that had busted that out probably 6 months or so ago. And Bongino had spoken about that pretty much quite a bit.
Yeah, I do remember now that you say that when that came out. That was quite a while ago. But my bigger question is, say he didn't leave. Don't you think his own people will string him up from a streetlight or something? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
There's nobody in Ukraine that hasn't had somebody die or maimed in that war.
Yeah.
And they've got nothing for it.
And they know Congress knows that war's over. That's why they've got to ramp these other ones up.
It feels that way. Question from Jennifer. I feel like we've been on the knife's edge of recession for years, and they're just gaming the numbers. Yesterday's market crash seems like more noise, not real signal. Thoughts?
Yeah.
I think we're in a recession, and we've been in a recession that was masked by low interest rates.
Well, I mean, Jennifer's here, right? That's Sky's girlfriend. We know each other. We eat lunch together every day. She shops for our groceries, and then Sky makes lunch here every day. Yeah, everything costs more, and we get less for it. Everything. I mean, do you know anybody financially who's doing better, or do you look around and people are being more cognizant of where their money is being spent and they have to get more value for their money? I think that's the case with everybody, at least everybody that I personally know. So, I mean, that answers your question. Yeah, we are in a recession.
We're in a recession right now. It's just masked by numbers, right?
Well, they're lying to you. They're lying to you about it.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful. Don't worry about it. There's more jobs or whatever. What this makes me think of, like, well, my grandfather it was still around, and he lived through the Depression. He was a World War II vet. And he used to tell me about how the Depression was. He said he'd go downtown and they'd have like a bushel of apples for a dime or some shit. I don't remember exactly what it was. But he would come home just thinking, damn, that's cheap. But he couldn't buy it.
Yeah.
Where now we have it, like, we're in a recession or a depression, depending on how you look at it. And you have money, but you can't afford it. You have a job and you can't afford it. So it sucks when you don't have a job and you don't have money and you can't afford things. To me, it sucks, at least mentally, worse when you have a job, you do have money, and you still can't afford things. And the way I'm gauging this is, I have to say, for the last 25 years, until recently, I'd gotten to a point in my life where I stopped worrying about the cost of things. Not all things. I didn't go out and buy Ferraris or something like that. But like what the grocery bill was, I don't give a fuck. How much gas is at the pump? Don't give a fuck. I just spent the money and had plenty left over and didn't worry about it. I'm at the point, my wife and I are at the point now, when we go to the grocery store, like, fuck.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm thinking, if this is hitting me, who hasn't even thought about money for 20, 25 years, what the fuck is a 25-year-old kid just getting started looking at trying to, because we don't live an extravagant life or anything. Like, we're just living kind of the life that I pretty much lived at 25 when I didn't have money. Like, I was able to scrape out what we do now, and I kind of transitioned to where, like, I made more money and kept my lifestyle mostly the same so we could save for the future. And now it's crushing to people like us. Like, we're not crushed, but we're, I guess, hesitant with spending. I've never been hesitant with spending since I've become successful. And now I am.
Cognizant of it, right? We would leave here and take a bunch of employees to dinner with us three, four nights a week. We would just go to a local restaurant or something, sit around, bullshit for a couple hours. We don't do that any longer because not because we don't want to go eat with them, but we are eating leftovers so that we can stand, and they're welcome to eat dinner with us. But we stand for 10, 15 minutes, bullshit, eat, and we are back to work because I am working 2 to 3 hours more every day, building a product to bring in more revenue. When I go places, I look at prices of things everywhere I go just to be curious as to what the prices are on things. So I know kind of what market value is on things that I have within my life. And I wanted to, if I want to sell things later on or where I should be with some prices. Prices are very, very high on things. So high, in fact, I said, you know, I wouldn't buy that at that price. So it's all stuff like, I used to say, you know, if you go to Walmart, 90% of the people in Walmart are spending their money on things that they don't have to have in their lives. It's like TJ Maxx or, Pier One Imports, right? There's nothing in Pier One Imports that you have to have.
No.
But everybody has it on all their shelves. 90% of their belongings are shit that do not add to them or add any value to their life. And in fact, if they burnt up, they wouldn't even replace them. But that's how things are. And when you go into stores, there are less and less options in places to include food. Like there's just, it will get to a point where, like Sonny talks about during the collapse of the USSR, you'll go to a store, stand in line for 5-6 hours. They'll give you a bag of grains. You don't even know what the grains are.
Usually you got
potatoes. Grain. Yeah, they have potatoes. What kind of potatoes? Potato. What kind of apple? Apple.
Apples. If you're lucky, the apples don't have worms.
Yeah, right? Meat. I mean, what kind of meat is this? It's meat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's meat. It's rat meat.
My friend James went to Portugal. And he met one of the students. He went down there to teach a class there, James Jaeger. And he said, what do you want for dinner? Do you want meat or do you want fish? And they said, what kind of meat? He said, it's meat. They didn't know what kind of meat it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a thing probably a couple, 3 years ago about the boomers, like, reaching end of life, retirement, stuff like that, and starting to, like, realize, well, I'm going to sell off my big house and move to this little, you know, retirement community or whatever. And they have all this shit, like you're talking about, Pier One shit, Pottery Barn shit, stuff like that. And they're doing the whole inheritance early thing. Like, Debbie gets the china and Bill gets the record collection or whatever, and they're finding out all their Gen X kids and millennial kids don't fucking want it.
Yep.
Like, they don't, they're like, I don't want your shit. I don't want your china. Like, mom, the china sat in the china cabinet for 40 fucking years. And we never used it because it's for something special, which apparently never happens, right? Or it comes out once for Thanksgiving every year, and I don't want that. My life doesn't have that in it. And so I'm just wondering how many decades of this consumer crap is about to go into landfills over the next decade or two. And then maybe that becomes a secondary market as well. Like, they don't want it now, but when you can't just go get something else, I don't know. But it seems like we've wasted an awful lot of money and energy to produce a lot of shit that nobody really wants or needs.
On stuff that does nothing.
On stuff that does nothing.
That's how, like you said. Yeah, that's how I buy all those big taxidermy mounts, right? Because Grandpa ran around Africa and Alaska and hunted all that shit. And then when he died, the kids inherited or the grandkids inherit that property or that estate. And the first thing they want to do is sell it. So they liquidate all that shit and goes to auction or goes to a dumpster.
Yeah.
I'll hold it for another 30 years. I'll be happy to have it.
Yeah. It's because you like it, but you're not going to spend the money he did for it. Right. You're going to buy.
Yeah, I saw a video the other day of this. It's this big cast iron machine. It's about this big.
Yeah.
It's round and you crank it. And I'm like, what is that? And I watched it and they feed 3 pieces of this fiber cord in. And it tight waves and it makes a rope. It's a rope maker. They're about $250. See them all over the place. Nobody knows what these things are. Love to have one. It actually does something. It's made of metal.
Have you seen the little things they make that make string out of fucking plastic bottles?
Yes. Yeah, I saw guys in prison. That's pretty cool too. I saw guys in prison make all kinds of threads and shit and cordage out of bed sheets and plastic bags. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, make rope and stuff.
Shit.
We just went last weekend about 4 hours from here outside of Nashville, which is 2 more hours, to it's called 127 mile yard sale, and actually it's this 2-lane highway that runs all the way up into Ohio. They have them all over the East Coast, and it's just these huge farmers' fields. They open up and you'll see these circus tents that are as big as my building. Military GP mediums and military big tents. Air conditioners and shit, and it's all these people just set like tons of military surplus. Like it's like a gun show mixed with an antique show, and there's all kinds of just Amish stuff. And man, I saw steam engines and steam powered tractors, like super, super cool shit that's just been sitting in a barn for 100 years. Luckily, I did not bring enough truck with me to buy most of the stuff that I wanted to get. But there was, it was very cool, man. Like, just beautiful. Some old man, black lacquered and red painted this tractor that runs a steam engine, man. I've never seen one other than in a museum. And here's one for sale out in a field here.
And you didn't buy it.
No, I did not buy it. I'll get an 8-in or something, you know, that's EMP proof, a Ford tractor at some point. My neighbor's got one.
Dorothy tried to get a commission on selling you a sculpture one time. We were at this cool shop in Texas. I don't know if you remember. We sent you the picture of it. It was a giant horse. And I'm like, I know somebody who might buy that fucking thing, right? So Dorothy was like negotiating, like, if we do this and he buys it, we want 10%. And she actually got the person to do it. And then he didn't buy it. But it was I do this, like, I'm like, realize the value you're bringing here, because you're putting it in front of somebody who just might go, yeah, I want that shit.
I want a roller coaster.
A roller coaster?
Yeah, like I could put a roller coaster here. I want roller coaster and like an old time big Ferris wheel. I'd love to have like an old or a carousel, you know?
Oh, what a great way to have a sniping position that's legit. A big Ferris wheel.
Right? Yeah.
He sent the guys up, and every time they come over the top,
you want to see something crazy? Go put in a flagpole. Like, people have I had no concept. I'm like, I want a flagpole. And you look at this 30-foot flagpole, and then they're like, well, you can put an 8-foot flag. 8-foot flag's not shit. Like, I want an amusement park. Like, you see it for, you know, 20 miles away.
Yeah.
Nope. Fucking $120,000 for the flagpole. That doesn't even include the concrete.
I was going to say, you need, for those flagpoles, you need a pretty big freaking anchor because it's a single structure.
Yep.
So you need to outweigh it massively to keep it up, and they're not exactly light.
What you can do is your phone company takes down its phone poles occasionally, and I'm able, you know, we've got a bunch of those, and those are 30-footers. So you can sink 5 and have a 25-foot flagpole, and that's a pretty inexpensive way to do it.
That's actually a really good deal. We did a lot with them when I was a kid. We built decks using them as your support. And our power, telephone, whatever company, they had a place that when they were broken, fucked up, whatever, they just threw them. You could just pull in there, cut off the busted piece, throw them in the back of a truck or on a trailer, and take them.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, like, today, that's even more valuable than it was back then. Like,
absolutely.
Something that has that level of structural capability, go buy a 6x6 is what I'm saying at Home Depot or Lowe's. And it's nowhere near as good, and it's very expensive.
Yeah, you can get 4 8-foot poles out of those things, and then you can sink them and have, you know, 5 feet above, and then just run your paneling and then screw gun them on all your you know, one, your quarter board is what they call it. It's like a 1x6.
Like a damn good dock, too. I mean, you can sink those into a lake bed, whatever.
And they're already creosoted, right?
Yep.
They're already creosoted. Yep. And you just take a long drill bit and you drill in at a super steep angle. And then every couple of years, you just fill that with used motor oil.
Okay. So here's a question, maybe better for you, because I don't live where I care. Basics for setting aquaponics with winter on the horizon is a great project. I'll tell you what I think. And I know you have freestanding IBCs, and I don't know what you do during your winter, and it get a lot colder there than here. My opinion is, if you're going to do aquaponics, you want your sump, if possible, in the ground, because what you're going to do in your winter when it's too cold to grow, if you're not in a greenhouse or something, is you're going to shut down all your grow beds, because that's where your heat loss is. And if you're at least 2 foot in the ground, you will not freeze solid, and your fish largely can overwinter. So if you're going to do it now, then you probably need to look at building a sump in the ground for your fish population. Or maybe you don't need to be doing aquaponics. Maybe you need to be doing hydroponics, because if you're going to shut down a system every year, then you need to grow your fish out to a point where you can utilize them in a year. And unless you're really clever, that's not that easy to do. People say tilapia grow out in 1 year. Yeah, if you want those fish, right? If you want them really plate-sized, they really don't. It takes like 18 to 24 months to get a good size on a tilapia. I know you do a lot of koi and shit because you just can flip them or whatever. What do you do in your winter? Because I know you do have the IBCs freestanding.
Okay, so that big steel support building around that IBC tote area there
was
so that we could Solex it in. But what are we growing? What is our crop? What do we produce in there? Lettuce, cabbage. Mm. What is the value of that? Nothing. There is no value to it whatsoever. So to heat that up and run that through the winter, absolutely useless. So what do I do? I don't do shit with it. I literally don't even turn my pumps off. The water freezes a couple of weeks out of the year. It starts, yeah. You'll see ice, but water's still trickling out.
Okay.
And then one morning I'll come out and that pump will be squealing, at which point I turn it off.
They do the same thing I do.
My whole entire IBC totes are solid blocks of ice with 14-inch koi inside them. And then every year when it defrosts, I'm like, man, I'll feed them. And I'm like, oh, I think it killed
the fish. How are you alive?
I think it killed the fish this year. They don't eat for a few weeks. And then finally I'll stick a net in and the fish are all still alive. Now, it'll kill my little goldfish. I'll put about 100 feeder fish in one of the tanks every year.
Yeah.
It'll kill those. But my koi are fine. I always have a couple broken fittings when we turn the pump back on and the water starts flowing. We hacksaw it out. We sawzall it out. Every time we go buy pipes, adapters, and fittings, I always buy three times more than what I need. So I've always got buckets full of the parts. Cody, hey, go figure out where that's pissing on the ground. Cut those parts out. Glue them in. Wait about 16 hours, pressurize the system, we're back up and running.
We just shut off all of our delivery returns.
Yep.
Let it freeze. That's all
now,
we do.
Now we do have a big air pump, and we have four air blocks in each of the 300-gallon tanks that run all through the winter.
Okay. And that's probably keeping enough open water down there. Because we'll have to, you know, water freezes from the top, so a lot of times you'll think it's frozen solid. It's not. There's a
I can put my arm down between the IBC tote and the block of ice because it contracts. But those fish, I don't think there's any water. I think it's frozen all the way across because it's on concrete. I think it thermal sinks, and it's just a block of ice.
How they would live in a solid block of ice, I don't know. But I do know that when it gets that cold, if they have any water, they use almost no oxygen, they eat nothing, and they produce no waste. So I've had, like, I have 2 foot deep steel stock tanks, ovals, like the 6 foot long, 2 foot wide, 2 foot deep ones. I've had those freeze, you know, 18 of 24 inches, and catfish and goldfish and koi, when they thaw out, they just start swimming around again. They don't give a shit.
Now, with that said, I've got a 50 foot row house over here from Farmer's Friends. If we put that if we put the aqua system in the row house, it would not freeze. I can have ice. I can have 0 degree temperature outside with the doors closed, no heating. It's oriented south facing, so the long side catches all the sun. When I have raised beds in there, we don't water them all through the winter. It makes so much heat inside that it pulls the humidity up and it gathers on the roof. And then it drops back down and self-waters that whole greenhouse.
Yep. I would tell you, if you want to grow through the winter, you want a greenhouse. And you probably want to do something with some level of ground contact or even subterranean. Or, we can't get into it today, but a thermal battery where you're actually pulling hot air out and pushing it into the ground. There's pretty easy ways to do that. Basically, you have a low pipe and a high pipe. And you need a fan that's like a fan that runs your fucking computer. That's all you need. And all summer long, you're pulling the hot air from the high point into the ground and venting it. And that's actually cooling the air because as it goes in the ground and transfers the heat, the air that comes out the low pipe is cooler than the air that goes in the top pipe. In the winter, you flip it around and the heat that you've stored in the ground comes out and keeps the greenhouse warm.
I have a double barrel stove that is fully sheet metal encased.
Uh-huh.
And Tad gave it to me on a job he took out to put in the greenhouse. We've never installed it, but that case, you fill that whole case around inside with sand or diatomaceous earth. You burn it off, and then it'll thermal sink through the entire evening, and it'll raise the temperature in there 30, 40 degrees.
Yeah.
And that's a single skin. That's a single wall row house. The difference between a row house and a greenhouse is a greenhouse is usually double wall or better, and has inflation in there so that air is heated. The row house is just single wall.
Yep.
I did a Gothic arch so that it sheds all the snow and ice. It's been in place since the beginning of COVID, and it's still got the same skin on that building.
How to start a business in the coming depression. Say expensive, but will run on anything. Refrigerators. Start your fucking business now. Don't wait for the depression to start your business. That's my thought. Just go start a business.
Deal with rich people. Deal with rich people. Deal with rich people. For real.
In sales, John, there's two things you can't sell to. Willful ignorance and poverty.
Poor. Yeah.
Right? Poverty and ignorance you cannot sell to. So go to rich people that want what you have and sell them your shit.
We hear it all the time. I'm in a bunch of lawn maintenance groups and entrepreneur lawn stuff. And they're constantly – the complaints come from the people who are always haggling over price. The guy is typically a lady you're going to deal with that makes the decisions on lawn care business. And you can target market through Facebook within 10 miles, 20 miles, but you can pull median income. So $120,000 a year, Mercedes drivers, whatever. The people with the more money, they all they want is the service. So if you provide the service and give them a little more than they ask for, they're never going to haggle with you over price. They're not calling you back over silly shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I hope you know this, Sam's Club and Costco. Costco makes sure their membership is just a little more than Sam's.
Yeah.
But based on if they have different pricing in different markets, they adjust. And they want about 10 bucks more for a basic and 10 bucks more for like the executive membership because they do not want a customer that makes a decision over $10.
And Costco doesn't make any money on the product. Costco makes all their money on membership. If you've not watched, there are some great videos on YouTube about Costco's business and how they run things. They also start their employees at $30 an hour, I believe, when they have
it's a something like that. Employee. It's crazy high now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they want the better employee. They want the employee that looks at Sam's and says, I don't want to work for you. I want to make more and can get the job.
Well, when you have an employee like that too, those guys, they're not going to, I don't feel like coming to work Monday. They know that there is not a job doing what they do that's going to pay them what Costco pays them.
Yeah.
So you have a more responsible employee because the poorer performance employees weed themselves out very quickly.
Very quickly. And like you said, the ones that are good enough to last know if I want to keep doing this thing, there is like if you have to work fast food, you want to work for Chick-fil-A.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to work for McDonald's or Burger King. And if you work for Chick-fil-A and you don't have a way to move beyond fast food, you know what? You don't want to lose your job.
Yep.
Because there is no better place to go. That's a good point.
Those kids at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru are like cheerleaders. Like
boy, they are.
They make you feel good about being in that line.
And you move to – I've seen those lines – I don't know why everybody can't do it, I guess, because they don't have the good employees. But I've seen those lines move. I don't go to fast food much, but if I drive by, I'll watch them. I'm stuck at a light, and I swear to God, they move more people through their line than we can get through the red fucking light on 199. It's kind of crazy.
Yep.
And they take care of them too. They have like overheads, like so they don't get in the sun. They have misting fans. Like
during the great chicken war sandwich chicken wars a couple of years ago, I had never had a chicken sandwich.
Okay.
So we took the video guys and cameras and we loaded up in the Excursion and we went to Chick-fil-A. We went to Wendy's. We went to Popeyes and another place. And I'm like, tell me about a chicken sandwich. Tell me about the Chick-fil-A. He's like, well, we're the only chicken sandwich. And this kid had it down, man. It was like he knew we were coming and he believed that shit. We got to Popeyes and I'm like, hey, tell me about Chick-fil-A. And they basically like, what the fuck do you want? You're lucky to even be here, motherfucker. Yeah. Like it was crazy. And at the Popeyes, it's a 90 degree drive-through. Yeah. Like I had to back my truck up like two to three times to get in there. And then we get up there and she's like, we don't have no chicken sandwiches. we didn't even get one.
And not like, I'm sorry, sir, we don't have any. Like, fuck you, we don't have any. Get out of here. Like,
go on, white boy.
Get out of my line.
Yeah, what are you? You're in the wrong neighborhood.
So we're back to barter again. Is there a barter network within the community? I think that there's a lot of people, and most of them haven't been around very long, they kind of want to join like as a node into a network that already exists. And I'm just going to say that takes time to develop trust. I'm sure that you have kind of layers of trust in your community, John. I know I do. There's people that have been to events. They've met each other in real life. They've shaken hands. And they're not just going to instantly say, hey, here's a welcome, Matt, and you're welcome into everything that goes on. Like, that takes time to develop relationships.
I start out with how long have you been a federal agent? Because that's what that always feels like.
Yeah.
Like there's always somebody who jumps into a live feed that nobody knows who they are, and they're asking completely inappropriate questions.
But he's edgy American. He can't be.
No, I know. I know who he is.
You know who he is. Okay.
He's been on my lives for probably a year now. He was supposed to come to SRF. Did not come to the last. Was supposed to come to the party. Just start your own thing, man. If you think it's worth having, then build it. And the people who believe and sync with you, they will show up.
You know, and you have to think, if you want to barter or even just sell, like, how do you have value to others? So I was talking to Jeff Lawton one time, and their PRI down in Australia, they decided to bring quail in. So they bring, and you know how quail are, like just eggs everywhere. So they bring these quail in. All of a sudden, they have more eggs than they can possibly use. So they're like, well, we'll barter with this other community. Well, they had plenty of eggs. The other community didn't have anything that they needed.
Yep.
And that's one of the things I see with small businesses, barter networks, and whatever in our space. So people figure out how to make comfrey salve. Well, that's great. I'm glad you know. I've done videos on how to do it. I think it's a good skill. But then they're in business with comfrey salve, right? And, like, how much comfrey salve do people need, and how easy is it to learn how to make? And, like, if your business is based on something anybody can do, unless you're stellar at marketing a brand, you're going to be lucky to tread water, let alone swim across a pool.
So
you've got to come up with some unique value that you bring to the table.
Amanda makes comfrey salve. She makes plantain salve. She does a pain salve. She does a hot and cold. She does a soap.
But you have a product line.
Right. So I don't want to sell a $20 tin to one customer. I want to sell 10 $20 tins to one customer. And when it's a full-time job almost, right? It gets to the point where, Amanda, you're putting all this time into this, when as if you just put it into SOE,
those are
$1,000 customers, right?
Yeah.
And the question is, could you sell all of these products to a non-existing client base? SOE has a client base. I have 75,000 on my email that goes out every night, right? So we have a captive audience. Now, Edgy American talks about, he's a knife maker. Okay, Edgy, you're a knife maker, and you want to do business with SOE, but I have $500,000 in knives. I do a $43,000 collaboration twice a year with Strider. That's my profit, $43,000.
I got you.
So I don't need another knife, Edgy, but you want SOE gear. That's a problem. That's where it goes back to cash, man. So how do you barter with me who doesn't want another knife?
This is why we invented money.
Yes.
You know, just go back to before there was money. You got two bands of nomads, and one's more of a stationary, so they're growing grain. You got another one, they're more hunters, so they have meat. And they meet, and they decide, you know, fighting each other is stupid, so let's find commerce. And eventually, the meat guys are like, look, we have enough fucking grain. We don't need any more fucking grain. We mostly eat meat as it is, and we have all the meat we need. And the grain people are like, yeah, we kind of live on bread, so but we still want to do business. So enter, you know, the Obsidian Blade, which at least is durable and transferable and valuable to somebody else somewhere else. And eventually that turns into money. And what makes money work is it accepted?
Yes.
And the more people that will take it, the more exchangeable it is, the more fungible it is, the more you can break it up into small pieces and parts and still have it work, the more you can adapt to what the seller is charging. So, like, if I have a gold bar, even if you're willing to take gold, John, I'm not willing to give it to you for $200 worth of gear. It's worth thousands and thousands. So how do I break off the piece? That's the flaw in gold. Mm-hmm. Money is what fills that role. The closest thing you have outside of dollars or yen or euros to money today is Bitcoin.
Do you know what everybody will trade you with? Everybody on this live feed right here, for the most part, would trade you for 22 long rifle, 9mm, and 5.56, and 308.
Yeah.
That's a common those calibers are used all over the world. That's why they're NATO calibers.
And they'll also trade you for bottles of fucking liquor.
Yep. Yeah.
And
if absolutely.
If they're a smoker, they'll trade you for cigarettes. Why do you think they have an ATF? I mean, why do you think those three things go into one agency? Alcohol, tobacco. I can kind of see, like, we have two substances. Firearms. Wait a minute.
You've never lost money buying firearms and selling them. You've never lost money on bullets. The value, whether you sell it or not, the value always goes up.
Is there, yeah. I'm going to say I've lost money on a gun, but I bought it in 2014 with Bitcoin.
When I was young,
I didn't really lose value on it, but you get what I mean.
I had three SP89s, okay? SP89s. That's an MP5K.
Yeah.
I bought the first one for $600. I bought the second for $900. I bought the third from $1,100 from a gun shop. I sold them back to the gun shop for $2,500 a piece. That's a pretty damn good investment. And if you wanted to go buy that gun right now, I'll bet that gun is upwards of $5,000 right now.
I bet.
Those guns don't lose value. When I had an HK91 308 assault rifle, battle rifle. My mom bought me. It was on the cover, on the back cover of Soldier of Fortune magazine, $475. That's what she paid the neighbor across the street, the old crusty Vietnam vet. Bought it for my 16th birthday. When I sold that gun, I sold it for $3,500 to a gun shop.
Yep.
You can't beat that investment.
So when I say I lost money, it's more about the value of Bitcoin going up because I bought that. It was a Browning pre-World War II A5, Belgian made. I bought it for $660 because that's what a Bitcoin was worth. It was probably worth $1,500 then. It's probably worth $3,000 today. So I didn't really lose money. It's just my cautionary tale about spending your Bitcoin when you don't need to.
Yeah, there's tons of stories of guys like, I had $5 million in Bitcoin. Yeah, but you paid 25 cents for it. lost the hard drive. You never had possession of it.
My upside in it is I bought my Challenger for cash with ETH.
I remember the day you did it. Yeah. I got the message the day you did it.
It was, and I paid 98 cents a coin for the ETH.
Yep.
So, like, I had to hit a tax hit on that, but it was like, I want this car. Dodge went crazy during COVID. They, like, dropped the price. I paid, like, $8,500 under dealer cost, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take this midlife crisis thing head on. Builder of Castle says two modern banks burned down in La Mesa. Nice little town during the peaceful protests. There was nothing in them to burn.
La Mesa, California, as in San Diego, La Mesa?
I guess. I don't know. But they burned down two banks. He said there was nothing in them to burn. I think there's a lot more shit that burns in office spaces than people realize. But a bank should have a pretty good fire suppression system.
You know what I like? I love the old mercantile buildings that have been sitting in Court Square for 60 years vacant, man. Yeah. Guys are revitalizing those. I just don't want one in Court Square. I want it out here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know what I found interesting? Years ago, Jeff Lawton from Permaculture World went up into New England, and he found all these old factories that were just sitting there empty, and they're all on rivers and streams and canals, and they all have hydroelectric systems that need a little bit of work, and you could just turn them back on.
Yep, that's how you would get me to move, set up a company town.
Yeah.
Because those are huge facilities, and they're usually on the county books, and they'll give them to you for a dollar. You just have to secure them. There's a great YouTube channel called Cold War Mercantile. I don't remember what state he's in, but there was a Buster Brown shoe factory, and they gave it to him for $1. And he has just shown the last 2 years where he's going through and cutting out the old cast iron and recycling it and then taking that money and buying glass to fix the windows. And he's just it's awesome that whoever owned it before him was just this hoarder who would go to auctions and just like he had a room that had like 400 toilets in there that were just brand new. So he just started liquidating stuff. One of them had like those old like 1960s, 70s fiberglass school chairs.
Yeah.
And he sold those and bought, you know, fixed all the doors in the building. It's just like there's a building listed. It's got three train tracks coming in and out of it. It's 160,000 square feet under roof. About 4 hours from here. And they want $1.3 million for it. And it was originally a factory that built all the wooden hammer handles for Craftsman tools. And it's got its own power facility.
Craftsman was awesome.
It started as a wood mill in the 1800s, and it's got its own power facility. It's got everything there, man. It's just sitting, just waiting.
We used to, when I was a kid, we would go to like flea markets and shit and look for busted ass Craftsman tools.
Yeah.
And they could be 100 years old, and you walked into a Sears, like I bought two really hatchets. And I walked into a Sears with them. They were pretty rusty and shit, but they were great for restoration. But the handles were busted.
Yep.
And I said, I don't need a new hatchet. I just need a new handle. Like, go get one.
Yeah.
That's 1980. And these had to be from, like, 1900. I mean,
Yep, you'd buy the old rusty tools at a swap meet and take them right into Sears, man. Same thing. Now, if you want Craftsman, it's a complete different animal, and it comes from Lowe's.
William S. became a YouTube member. That must be for you, because I don't think I have memberships turned on.
Thank you, man. Yeah, we have a membership. It's $10. We do two video podcasts that are 2 to 2.5 hours a week that come out to the members only. If you want to see what those are about, they come out to the public about 6 months behind. Every Friday, we do a Q&A where you as a member ask a question, and Amanda and I sit down and build an in-depth video to give you as much actionable information to change your life as fast as we can. And we put a lot of time, and I think we give a lot of value in that.
Awesome. Before we move on to this next question, I just on the water wheels and shit, Jeff showed this one plant in one of these videos, and it had like two huge water wheels, and one was dedicated to making electricity. The other one was running an air compression system and basically had plumbed air through the whole facility. So they had both electrical and air power. And the one that was doing the air compression was also mechanically moving certain machinery. So it was like they had two water wheels doing three things: direct mechanical application, electrical generation, and air compression.
And I've seen them where they have it just turns a big leather belt, and then that they have takeoffs to where they'll turn lathes and mills and grist mills. I've even seen old sewing machine factories that were set up off of just mechanical power from the water, and then sawmills especially too.
Yeah. If I remember right, this was run the mechanical application was running big giant looms that were making fabric.
Yep.
And then it was being sewed with electricity elsewhere, but they were making these huge looms that made like giant rolls of fabric, which the Northeast used to be an industrial powerhouse for all this shit. And I know people know that from history class about like pre-Civil War. I'm talking like 1920s, 1930s, late 1800s, all the way up into the 50s. The North, like Indiana, Massachusetts, Connecticut, they were huge industrial powers. And it was a massive blue-collar base, and basically all our labor went overseas is where it
went. If you want to see a great little short movie and story, look up Origin, Maine. Jocko is involved in that company, and I believe the town's called Origin. But they built denim, and they made leather boots. They went in and found this factory. These two brothers, I believe, bought this old factory. And they were able to find some of the original employees and some of the maintenance guys. And they actually stood this whole factory back up. And they are making 100% in the United States made boot right now.
Oh, wow.
And they have their documentary guy put together a video. It's like 5 minutes long. Well worth watching. Who's Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs?
Okay.
He did another similar story on a company on what it takes to actually make a pencil in the United States. And then he had another one that was what it takes to make a flannel, a U.S. flannel shirt in the United States. It's almost impossible right now.
It's crazy what they've done. And you would think, like, if you really wanted a better country, all these places, give it the fucking industrialists. Give it to them for free. You're not collecting any property tax. It's sitting there rusting and rotting. Right. We have we have free energy, basically, like, and not fake, fictitious free energy we're going to harvest from the space aliens assholes. Like, literally, like, turn the switch and the wheel starts spinning and power comes out.
Stop taxing them to death. Give them 3 years, no tax or whatever.
Yeah.
Let them turn that back into their employees, man. Stop fucking take for every dollar I give an employee, I give 85 cents to the government.
So I have a friend who built a factory on the Gulf Coast of Texas, Chinese factory. It was because of Trump that it got built here instead of in China. Basically, the tariffs, the Chinese are like, fuck the tariffs, we'll just build it in America and sell it in America. But the other part of it was there was regulations that were preventing these facilities from using capped gas wells that have been like, they still produce gas, but not enough to make it worth exporting the gas. So this factory is running on power from a capped gas well. So they have free electricity.
Yep.
And this is not a small factory. This is like, you know, airport hangar size shit. that's doing, I think, plastics manufacturing. And down near, like, Freeport-Galveston area, maybe more toward Port Aransas, instead of China, because it was more expedient to build it in the United States. But if you think about the area we're talking about, Northeast, you want a place to not run a fucking business. Like, I don't want to run a business in New York State. I don't want to run one in Connecticut. I don't want to run one in Massachusetts. But those were industrial powerhouses. Ithaca Shotguns. I mean, yeah. Ithaca's a tiny little town in New York. Used to be a great blue-collar place to live. Kodak. Kodak was employed like a fucking 10% of New York State outside of the New York City area. And it's dead. Kodak had the fucking digital camera in the 1970s and fucking pissed it away.
Right? 2 hours, I mean, like, 2 hours from here, there's a place called Cairo, Illinois. It was supposed to be the capital of the United States. It's where the Ohio converges. And the last house that was built there was over 50 years ago, the last residence. There are huge palatial estates. Amanda and I went and did an abandoned video there. We spent the entire day walking into massive abandoned buildings. Everything there's for sale, but it's in Illinois. They will tax the shit out of you.
Nobody wants it.
They will not let you do any business. The nearest town had a foam factory that went out of business a couple of years ago. The other town next to them was the kitty litter capital of the world. Everything is shut down in these places. It is sitting there just to be taken. Literally, it doesn't cost. The average median house income is 46. The average property is $46,000. It's in Illinois. They tax the shit out of you. We could never go there and set up the business that we have there in Illinois. Somebody said it's hard getting stuff from the United States. It's absolutely almost impossible to get things from the United States. He mentioned motors and bolts as separate companies. When we moved here, the town next to us had a place called Snow's, and they would actually rewrap and rewind starter motors and alternators. It doesn't exist anymore. They're just out of business. Guy that works on a bunch of my vehicles bought three starter motors back to back to back and had three failures on these starter motors. Two of them were different brands. Out of the box, just failures coming in from Mexico, coming in from China.
And you used to be able to, when you needed a starter motor and you didn't have it, down the fucking junkyard, rip one off a car that had been laying there for 5 years, stuck it in your car, and it worked for another 3 or 4 years. Even though you pulled it off of a junk car. And where was that starter motor made? Probably in Detroit or a suburb around Detroit supporting the auto industry. That's what it used to be.
Kevin, yes, Cairo, Illinois is a flood zone. They do have a wall around the entire place now with floodgates that will drop. Anybody wants to go just see some wild stuff, man, and you just happen to be driving through there, jump out and look around. I've got probably a 2 hour video we put up of just going around into, we did the whole hospital. It closed down in, I think, the mid 80s. Like, we were in the operating rooms. We were in the elevator carriages. We were all over that whole city.
Here's the thing that gets me. People don't understand. Like, if you cut taxes, the government actually gets more money. And I'll explain that in a very simple way right now. You are a merchandising company. You make product and you sell it. What happens, John, when you want more money and you put shit on sale? What happens to your sales?
We sell more of it.
You sell more. So if something's less expensive, you sell more.
Sales
tax. So if you cut taxes and success is more affordable, you get more success, you get more commerce, more people buy shit, more people make more money. And even though you're taking a smaller percentage, you get higher government receipts. So as you were talking about how hard it is to get shit in America anymore and all these expenses and taxes, you almost wonder, are foreign governments like China actually lobbying our government, not just to make their life easier to get shit in, but keep your taxes high? I never really thought about that. That's like the next step in Ross Perot's whole mental process from those days. Like,
well, your politicians hate America. I mean, it's like David Smith said, Lewiston, Maine has a factory on the RXR and was bought by China. And at the same time, Obama placed 20,000 Somali refugees. That's to destroy that town. That's to destroy the heritage. It's to destroy all of the history. When you are being diluted as a U.S. citizen, as an American, you are being diluted. They are bringing people who hate your way of life and flooding your country with those people. I heard Trump say 20 to 50 million. We don't even know how many people they just brought in.
And no. And we say people through the southern border. Those are not Mexican people from Mexico.
No.
They literally emptied the insane asylums. They emptied the prisons. They took the worst of the worst. They no longer have to feed and house those people. And they trucked them. They literally brought them to the United States border. And now you're seeing rapes and murders and stabbings in broad daylight in major cities. And when citizens try to stop that, and there's a conflict, they put down. Those people in jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they let the rapist out on no bail. They just literally, like, there's 100 of them in the last 6 months in New York that are out walking currently around from who raped and murdered people.
No cash bail with a rape charge. Like,
yep.
But yet you'll throw somebody in prison for a clerical error. Like, this is an insane situation we're in. Here, AJ, new question. If you're moderately well prepped, good food, defense, fuel, water situation already, what would you focus on investing on or in right now? Build a business? That's my answer all the time.
Well, I think AJ knows the answer to that. He is building a business. Yeah. AJ, for people that don't know, has a big freeze drying business. And we're not talking like Harvest Right freeze dries. He's buying commercial units from Harvest Right. I was present when he said, I'm going to buy 20 extra large Harvest Right freeze dryers. He is processing and making his own bone broth, and that bone broth is freeze dried and put into tube packs, which is then put into containers so that you can take bone broth on the go with you when you need nutrients, sustenance, or minerals for rehydration. And he also has a catering business. Like, he shows up on the tarmac with a catering trailer and caters private jets.
Yep. Yep. He's been here too. He's actually brought me some of his product to one of my workshops. Yep. Very good. He asked me about doing an MSP discount. I said, build a business. I don't do discount vendors until you have a working business, but I'm ready when you are, bro.
Yeah. That dude's making moves.
That's the way to be. And that's always my answer. And one of the things that kind of turbocharged that for me is, you know, History Channel came out with this whole, that made America, like, they have, like, the machines, the Titans, the food, right? And when I started watching the food ones,
yeah,
I realized how many of the biggest brands known in the world were built during the Great Depression. Even if they started in the late 1800s or something, they didn't really turn the corner until the Depression. I'm talking Hershey's Chocolate, Frito-Lay, like, Taco Bell, like, global brands were built in the height of the Depression.
And our children and grandchildren are being taught in high school and elementary school that those titans of industry are the devil.
Yep.
Those are the bad guys.
And Kellogg's was this warfare shit. You know that when Hershey's went through this huge crisis, I can't remember the Hershey guy, if it was the first or the second guy, but he basically made a decree. We will not let, this is the middle of the Depression, we will not lay anybody off. But he did have to freeze raises and cut some salaries to do it. But it was either we lay off half the plant or we make this adjustment till we get through this and figure out what to do. His workers went on strike. I mean, and this is old school strike where you have like, guys with rifles defending the factory and shit.
Yeah, you have Pinkerton, Pinkerton men.
Yeah, and like, so even then, the guy that was literally sticking his neck out, hoping his own board didn't cut his head off, was attacked for doing everything he could to not cost a single job to the factory. And we've gotten this mindset now where, like, everybody that's successful is bad. Unless they're a Democrat, then they're good. Like, it's an insanity. Everybody that has money is bad, and including people that build it from nothing, unless they're Bill Gates spreading toxins. You mentioned earlier about the polio thing. There was also, and this is confirmed, like a bad batch of vaccines that had been infected with something, and his organization dumped it on Africa.
Because so there was I think it was Pfizer had contaminated blood with HIV. I think it was Pfizer. They knew that the blood was contaminated, so they sent it to, I think they sent it to Italy. And then hundreds of people actually got HIV, and they put some people in prison. They actually extradited some people, put them on trial, and it went to prison, and they actually got put in prison. I believe it was Italy.
You can, if you just find, you'll find that it originated here in the United States. The U.S. company knew that the blood was contaminated and they shipped it all. I'm pretty sure it was Italy.
Colin says, do you see the general populace value handmade quality products over something Chinese in the next 10 years? I think the more it's something you rely on, the more that will be the case. Like right now, if I wanted to go into a business, like let's say doing processing of meat or something like that, do you know what I want? I had a friend, my uncle's friend named Snokey when I was a kid. He had a sausage press that was like about 50 pounds of meat would fit in it, and you turned the thing on the top of it, and that thing was 150 years old if it was a day back then. I want that. You can't buy that. That doesn't exist today. So I think, like, if you're in a business that you're producing a thing and you rely on the thing, that's your premium market. I don't know that Susie Homemaker is ever going to give a fuck that the refrigerator she buys is dead in 5 years.
Well, let me say this, right? We all know that record players still exist.
Yeah.
And we all know that there are stores where they sell nothing but records, and those places seem to stay in business somehow. So there is always that unique thing or that original, right? People's ears want that sound. And it's the same thing with artists, right? You can go buy a world famous print from whatever artist at Walmart. But that guy's gallery, he always has the ability to sell that stuff, and he always has a line of customers 2 to 3 years long, right? Me, the products I make, we're probably the most expensive person in my market. And guys come on all the time, and they're like, why are you so expensive? And I say, look, if you look around and you find somebody making something similar in price to me and they're charging more, let me know. I will raise my price right then. I'll go on the website. I want to be the most expensive guy there is. I cannot build enough product, no matter how many people I hire, no matter how many sewing machines I have. I cannot make enough product to fulfill the need for the clients that I have. So, yeah, there's always going to be a guy that wants that handmade thing, right? Because you can go and buy a backpack that looks and will hold the same amount of stuff that I have for $100 on Amazon. So how do I get $350 all day long? If I had 100 of them right now, I could sell them right now at $350 right now today. When we do any kind of discount on a Black Friday, I can bring $1.5 million into my bank account through my – so much so that they start questioning and
I have multiple lines. Yeah.
On a Black Friday being Thursday, Friday, Saturday, $1.5 million. We've done it multiple times. So I would say yes, there is that, because you always hear they don't make it like they used to. That should be my company's slogan, is we still make it like we used to.
Yeah. I think there always is that market. I think the market itself is smaller, but that's okay, because I've always said you want to sell to the want, not to the need. Mm-hmm. If you're going to sell to the need, you're going to compete with Nabisco, and they will kill you. Or as Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank says, they will crush you like the cockroach that you are, right? You can't sell to the need. What is the first thing people do when they lose a job or they have to cut expenses? They look at, like, can I switch my electric company? Can I switch my cell phone company? Can I clip coupons for the grocery store? Can I buy the generic brand? The first thing people cut is their needs, right? Their non-discretionary spending. They see where they can cut that. And they can't cut it that much, can they? Like switching from Kellogg's to store brand, right? You're not going to save that much money. But that motherfucker will still buy a concert ticket to sit in the front row of that 80s band that he remembers from when he was a kid when he's broke. He will pay more for what he wants, even in a time of stress, than he'll pay for what he needs if he can cut corners there. So you don't sell a need, you sell a want. I want the best motherfucking shit I can get because it matters to me. Now, that means that 95% of people that buy shit in your space probably won't buy from you. You don't give a fuck. Nope. You want to sell to the 5% that says, I don't care what that costs. I want that right now while it's available. Because that market's so large that 5% is more than you'll ever serve.
Our customers are buying equipment that they hope that they never have to use, but it'll be the worst day of their life when they have to use it. And they know that our product, it's going to last the test of time. We have gear out there right now that I personally made in the 90s. That those men who I sold that gear to, their grandkids are now using that equipment in a combat role third generation children. I've got over 20 pieces of equipment in the SEAL UDT Museum in Florida right now. Like that gear, there's not a war movie out there that's been made since I've been alive that I don't have product that's in those theaters of operation.
Wow. That's pretty damn impressive. So the answer is yes. The general population will be buying better quality product, and they will do it right now.
You know, when in Demolition Man, I saw somebody say rat burgers in here. Demolition Man. When he woke up and he had to go to the museum to be able to get a gun out of the museum, that's SOE gear. After we have the next Civil War and the third Civil War, after we fight the war with the aliens, and you have to go find some kit to use on the next war, you're going to break my shit out of a museum and my stuff's going to be in there. You're going to pull it out of great, great grandfather's war chest that got put up in the attic, and our shit's still going to be relevant that day.
Hardway, Alaska. So this is real winter. Winter's 2 months away. If I plant trees, apple and pear, how would I winterize them for 20 below and 4 foot of snow? Trees are 50% off if that's what I'm planting late. Okay. So trees go dormant in the winter. However, if you were to plant those right now, there is a high degree of probability that they're not going to be able to establish themselves enough to make it through that kind of winter. Of course, Alaska, depending on where you are, you can have winters that aren't much worse than mine, or you can have winters that are awful. 20 below sounds awful. I would personally allow those trees to go dormant in pots in a semi-protected environment and plant them in spring so that they get a full season. Or you probably can plant them once they're dormant, except you won't be able to dig a fucking hole is the problem. Like, planting trees in fall is great if they're already dormant, because then they wake up in spring and they immediately start sending out new roots. But I don't know. I mean, I don't deal with that kind of cold, John.
Yeah, I mean, row house, man. Can you do a row house? Can you do a cold frame? Get with some dudes who are growing trees in your area. Get with an arbor guy or a nursery guy and ask them what to do. I've got some 120 trees I've put in. Most of the trees I put in, they're growing, but they're not performing.
Mm.
The trees that Tim Riley put in that last year, and the trees that I can't remember
Billy?
His name, man. No, well, Billy put some trees in too. There's another dude. I'm sorry, I cannot remember your name. I know you're probably listening to this right now too. Dude from Tennessee out by Nicole. Carrie. Those trees they put in the last 2 years are outperforming all the trees that we put in. And part of it's the tree too, having the right tree.
Yeah.
The cultivars that are for your area, man. The box stores, I've got trees that are performing from the box stores. But the like Arkansas Black apples and the ones that are coming from the nurserymen here that have propagated those things through generations, man, we put in some pear trees that gave me one tree gave me more than like 20 of the peach trees all put together.
Gotcha. I will tell you, if you have to go to the catalog route, Stark Brothers has like a second tier, like a higher level quality, like cherry picked saplings. It's called Select or something. Of the catalogs, and I mean of all the catalogs, Rain Tree, all of it, they're probably the best performing catalog trees I've ever seen. They take off faster, but remember, when you're getting like a bare root tree, somebody's pulled that tree out of the ground and pruned the shit out of the root system.
Strong Roots Resources, that's him.
Okay, Strong Roots Resources, guys. Let's put that
up. You've met him a bunch of times. Okay. I've done lives with him a bunch, Nicole and I have. Carrie Brown, downtown Carrie Brown.
If you are patient and you plant the right trees from seed where they will grow for the rest of their existence, you will never exceed the quality of that tree. The issue gets to things like, well, I want this particular variety of apple and it doesn't reproduce from seed. And I would tell you, if you do something like you plant standard apple seed, you let that grow up into a whip, and you graft the variety you want in place where that root system has never been disturbed and never moved. You can't beat that. And people think it takes longer. You're only buying, when you buy a grafted sapling, a year and a half to 2.5 years. And if it gets passed out in that, you know, first 5 years, you bought nothing getting into production. So don't be afraid to, like, and it's the cheapest way to go, man. You can save any apple seed, throw it in the refrigerator and wet, moist paper towel in a Ziploc bag for a month, and it'll grow like crazy when you plant it.
And my kids... keep in mind, the place that it's going to grow the best is never where I want it to be.
No, no.
We bring in 120 pumpkins every year for Halloween and put them on the fence posts. And then they just go through the winter and they fall down and they implode. And then the chickens eat all those seeds and they walk around and poop them out. And we will have pumpkins and watermelons that are just growing incredible, outperforming 10 to 1 where we planted them. And wherever I plant them, they never grow like I want them to grow. The best stuff that grows on the property is the stuff that just the rain washed it, you know, 100 yards away, or a chicken pooped it out someplace.
Uh-huh.
It's never where you want it to be. You'll have this tree in the worst place, in my eyes, the worst place possible, that's doing the absolute best. I'm like, yep, I really wanted to put a building there.
Right out my window, a little bit too close to my outdoor kitchen for my taste, a mulberry with a trunk on it that's freaking, I can't get my two hands around it. It's only 3 years old, and it grew because a chicken ate a mulberry and happened to be where they shit, right? Yep. And I really wish I could move it just 3 feet away so it's not going to be dropping mulberries on my roof or whatever. But, yeah, I've got, like, as hard as this place is, I've got hackberry growing everywhere now, and I've got hackberries that are 6 to 8 years old that are huge. 6 to 8 years, and they're massive. Like, you would never put a tree out of a pot in and get it to be that big that fast. And they're all growing where my oaks died. Because it's just a harsh environment. We had all these bad drought years. We had oak wilt come in. And everywhere an oak dies, a hackberry grows. To the point now where if I have an oak and it doesn't look like I'm trying to save it, and a hackberry seedling comes up, I just cut the fucking oak down. Because I know that hackberry's telling me this tree's dead anyway. Like, whatever you can do to get natural progression, and remember, you can graft. Grafting is not hard. It is one of the easiest skills to master there is, and plant your stuff from seed and then graft onto it if you wanted to do something else. Or, you know, plant things that, like, I don't know if most people know this, there is an apple that you can plant from seed that will do fantastically, produces a great apple. It's called Antonovka. In Poland, it's called the people's apple. It might be good for our buddy here from Alaska. It will overwinter down to 40 below zero, and they reproduce from seed beautifully. Big, yellow, delicious apple, but they don't produce here. It doesn't get cold enough here.
Yep.
It has to full-on freeze. You need a good 1 to 2 months of that tree being completely dormant for it to produce. They grow fast as fuck, and Sheffield's is the company you can buy seed from.
Colin H. says, question, this age of eBay, Amazon, et cetera, would it be better from a marketing perspective to sell product on those platforms or only drive sales to personal webpage? Colin, I mean, do you want more money? Sell anywhere that you can get money from. I use Marketplace all the time. I buy an amazingly large amount of shit that I had no intention of buying because of Marketplace. I get on damn Marketplace looking for something, and before you know it, I mean, we just found a CH-47 dual prop Marine Corps helicopter fuselage. It's 100 feet long. And I'm trying to figure out how to move it 1,500 miles because I want it. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with it, but had I not been on there, I definitely wouldn't be buying this stupid thing. And I want it for an Airbnb. I really want it for a podcast studio. I just think it'd be
okay. Cool.
I want it for
people are building houses out of shit like that. There's a show.
Train cars.
I don't know what it comes on. My wife records it on the DVR. It's called Unlocked. And one of the episodes was this dude lives in Washington State. He has this massive cargo plane out in the middle of the woods. Like, he bought like 20 acres and he has it like dead center where no one could see it. And he lives in it. And he has like built this entire house. He had to build. It's like fucking Robinson Crusoe and shit. He's got like rope bridges and shit. Because it's tall, right? It's high to get in it and all. You don't have, you know, a jetway coming out to it. You probably shouldn't watch that show. It'll give you too many fucking ideas.
Kiri says Marketplace is like crack. I know it is, Kiri, because I have shit here at my house that you bought off Marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. We do need to wrap up, John. We're at 2 hours, and I'm going to say if y'all want to catch more of me today, I'm going to be interviewed by Dr. Ken Berry at 1 p.m. today on his channel, but not his keto channel. He has another channel called OB Farms. I'll be on there today if you guys want to catch up with me. If you're on John's side of the fence and you've never heard of me before, which is unlikely because thank you, John, for all the years of letting people know about what we do at TSP. But the survivalpodcast.com is where you'll find my podcast. This is episode 3,536 today, so we probably have something that you'd be interested in if you haven't. And, John, I mean, I've told you this here and there, but sincerely, thank you. People that don't know, John was supporting my show when I was fucking absolutely nobody. I mean, two months in, right? And I didn't even know you were doing it yet at that point, and you were. But I was probably 2 months in, well, a month and a half in. It was like August of my first year that I started really hearing from you. And then you were telling me shit like, I make the people in my factory listen to your show. I'm like, holy shit. And so John has a habit of supporting people without even telling them sometimes. And thank you, John, for doing that. But if y'all want to learn more about me, come by the Survival Podcast. John, go ahead and finish.
We believed in what you were doing, man. And it was the largest part of the catalyst to leaving California. And where we are now is because of your show. I do a live every night at 9 o'clock. If you guys want to jump on, we talk light politics, current events, business, homesteading, whatever you want to talk about. And then I have 5,000 some videos on YouTube that are actually real produced videos that are very different than my walking around and just yelling at the camera type stuff. So jump on there. I'm super easy to find. And, you might not always agree with what I have to say, but you'll always know exactly what I thought about what I said. So we'll see you guys tonight at 9 o'clock on the SOE YouTube channel.
And for those asking, that would be Central Time. John's in Tennessee, so he's going to give you his time just like me. And so my 1 p.m. today is Central as well. John, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, man.
And many thanks to Nicole Sauce, who made this whole first Tuesday.
Guys, Nicole's not feeling well, so keep her in your thoughts, prayers, whatever it is you do. I'm sure she could use every bit of it. She's just got kind of the flu going around. She's going to be okay, but she was not. This is the first time she's ever missed a show that we've done.
I've never had her miss one either. Take care, John. Thank you.
See you.
They said you should have a house. The American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.